Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Logos Roundtable, episode number 8. I don't even know who's moderating tonight. Tonight, we're discussing social engineering and its impact on family and society and our lives and everything around us. And hopefully, we are going to make sure all your YouTube windows are muted. And just how social engineering plays a role in our lives, and we don't even know it's there or know it's happening. And so we'll cover what is social engineering and some examples of it and things that are used against us, from global warming to, you know, transgender, homosexuality, humans are a plague on the planet, all the latest memes that you hear out there, all the latest buzz terms and stuff. Are these truly real? How about white privilege? Is that social engineering, or is that true? Or do whites have to work as hard as everyone else? Is it just, you know, you're born white and therefore you have privilege just because you were born with a certain skin color? Television, radio, etc., all of the different forms of media that we take in, that impact us with social engineering. It used to be done through plays and through books a lot more, but since most of the population doesn't read anymore, they don't do it through books and stuff, and you know, most people don't really go to see plays anymore either, so that kind of thing falls on Hollywood and movies and TV shows and radio, especially things like your morning talk shows and whatnot. So anyway, how about we start off with Chris today?
Sure. Great. Well, I think you really nailed it. And I think that perhaps the reason that many people don't read so much anymore is through a product of social engineering. I think, you know, to remove that literacy, now we have folks who have a very short attention span, have to absorb what they get in small bits, and you know, YouTube videos and such. And I think that we've definitely seen a chipping away at the norms, social norms, or the degradation of our society over a long period of time. And you can see it through my lifetime with television, especially watching a lot of the shows, that you can see the angle of which we're just the decline of where we're going, from the Archie Bunkers to the All in the Families to Married with Children, and now nowadays, you know, with the Netflix shows and things like that, they're quite
so
debased.
What was,
you know, You're the Worst, or you know, what's that, Broad City, and things like, just celebrating all kinds of really horrible behavior.
What sort of TV did you see as a child? You're the oldest of all of us.
I guess so.
So you know, you were born in what, 67? Okay,
yeah,
so
Summer of Love. Hey,
yeah, there
July
you go.
Of 67. I'm a product of that.
So what sort of television was popular then? I remember, you know, when I was a kid, reruns of Leave It to Beaver were still popular. Mayberry,
yes.
All in the Family, that's a bad example. But all of these shows, except for All in the Family, they all really geared toward positive family images, not negative ones.
Yeah, and then they started portraying, like, the seems like around that time when there was that strife, the social, kind of what we see now, but on a, I think, on a different scale, where you introduce, you know, Meathead, the liberal, the socialist, if you will, or that person, the educated individual, and then you have the old school man who's just unbudging, the ignorant, you know, worker, these, doesn't know anything, but you know, he has some common sense every now and then, but for the most part he's the villain. Right now we have Homer Simpson, who is, you know, the norm. He's the idiot father, the degradation of the male, really, you know, from my perspective. But yeah, I used to watch those kind of shows. So the reruns of All in the Family, or I'm sorry, Brady Bunch, Gilligan's Island, and things like that. Silly, The Monkees, which is you know, that's an interesting thing all in itself, you know.
The Monkees, then, at least, were the beginning of the social engineering and mind control, selling the 60s. you know, the Beatles or the, you know, the Monkees were sort of the American answer to the Beatles, mm-hmm. the British invasion and actual intellectual or mind control attack on America by the British.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can see that. I'll probably yield right now to the next person, but that's been my interpretation.
Steve.
Just refresh me real quick on what the topic is here.
Well, social engineering, man. We're just going around giving our input, you know.
Just on anything we're
talking about. Through mass like means, I believe, like, well, we were talking about television or radio.
Yeah, you were talking about television, and I'll contribute to that a bit. The timeline of television is really interesting too, to watch just how evolution of television and education all goes together, because really when the kids weren't in television, there's a lot of statistical studies done showing just how many hours kids watch on like television and whatnot. The statistics dropped a lot for TV because the internet came out, and now kids are on tablets and on their laptops and their smartphones. And so they're on their apps and on their favorite like channels, like they're on YouTube or Facebook or something like that, as opposed to watching like CNN, you know. It's seeing a lot of kids, I don't know, if you were to ask them, they'd probably say it's for old people because it's like TV, you know, who watches that anymore? I got my app on the go, is the way that some of the statistics are showing. And so to look at how all that's gone hand in hand.
Legacy media.
Yeah. And so to look at all that and the way that it's affecting the way that the people think, it's really interesting. Just, I don't know, I interact with people on a day-to-day basis out in public, and for the most part, people are decent there. But when you get behind the screen of a computer, I mean, I still run into crazies out in public, but when you get behind the screen of the computer, it's like every forum I go and I try to just have a conversation with someone, and, you know, everyone's got a bone to pick. So somehow, you know, that's contributing to that. I would assume that that's part of the TV and the video games as well, to simulate that feeling of adrenaline through some sort of social event. So that's interesting. But yeah, again, the timeline is also quite interesting, if you aren't familiar with it yet. So I don't want to take up too much time about it.
Well, why don't you recap on the timeline? Just kind of recap it.
Cool. So supposedly 1925, John Baird performs the first test of a working television system. It's in London, in England, throughout the 1920s. Telephone lines are used for the first time in the late 20s in 1927, in April 7th. And the first fully electronic television system is achieved by Philo Taylor Farnsworth in San Francisco, California, in September 7th.
You know, and just to interrupt you really quickly, Steve, I also recommend people check out the series I did with Dr. Hans Utter, The Secret History of FM Radio, which branched off of our series Music, Mind Control, and Psychobiology, so that people can see how initially they were using radio. And so, you know, obviously TV is another form of broadcasting. So TV, you know, pictures shortly followed sound.
Yeah, I'll also suggest the listeners to go check that out, because that is a fantastic series that Jan and Hans put together.
Thanks.
So the television, it gets, the major thing about it is that it comes to popularity in a peacetime setting. It's just after the First World War, just before the Second World War. And there's a really interesting book that I read a couple years back. It's called The Instincts of the Herd in Peace and War, or something like that, by William Trotter, or Wilfred Trotter, I think. But there's a lot of different techniques that go about influencing people during wartime and peacetime. So when these events do happen, there's already sciences established on how to go about you know, it's not all evil. It's how to manage it and how to reduce risk factors and whatnot. And so the TV is coming out just before the Second World War. Let me get my notes back up here. And then you get the first color TV in the late 20s. So it all happens pretty quick. You have black and white TV is a pretty short thing there just for a few years. Religious services are being casted. It's being put in homes as early as the 1930s. They're starting to spread it. You got the British Broadcasting Corporation, which begins the TV regular broadcast in just the early 30s.
And then the British actually had to, they were actually taxed for that, and they still are. They have to pay an annual tax to fund the BBC's propaganda.
Yep. And so that happens just like 5-6 years after they go public with it all. And so it gets pushed out on people really quick. And it gets put in people's homes. And as Jan says, now people have to pay for it. And so it's something that Caleb was talking about this earlier. There's different techniques that they use for persuasion to give you their money or to become involved in things. And so rationally in your mind, you may be prone to believing that because you paid for something, it really is worth it. Like, oh, you know, I spent $200 on these shoes, and that was definitely a good decision because I spent $200 on these shoes. And so you think with television and whatnot, even with things like Netflix or something, a lot of the content on there is garbage. Even people that pay for the subscription think it's garbage, but they still pay for it because they're like, well, you know, I've
well, and we should probably let Caleb go into some of this now, but you know, Chris and I both canceled our Netflix subscriptions recently. I canceled mine right when they made the contract with the Obamas, and their propaganda was already bad enough, but you know, when they teamed up with the Obamas, that was just enough. So any of you out there that haven't canceled your Netflix subscriptions yet, you really should. That's some of the worst type of social engineering out there. But we can come back to you and let you go in more in depth here in a minute, Caleb. Let's switch over to Steve. Let's switch over to Caleb and let Caleb go for a stretch here.
Okay, so social engineering. The use of centralized planning in an attempt to manage social change and regulate the future development and behavior of society. Okay, so what we're talking about, what are we really talking about here when we're talking about social engineering? People have heard these phrases coined by Edward Bernays before and friends. Jan's done a whole bunch of work already. You can refer to his past shows as far as the deep social engineering stuff. What we're talking about today is, okay, what are we really talking about here in modern day, the modern day brainwashing social engineering that we're seeing, and how does it affect the human mind, and what is the actual goal here?
Well, Caleb, how about you quick provide a definition for what social engineering is in the context we're using it?
Good job. Yeah, good idea.
Well, okay, so social engineering, let me try to break this down the way that I see it. It's a group that wants to influence another group.
To impose itself intellectually on another group without their awareness of it.
Correct. So when we're talking about social engineering, it's a centralized planning. Okay, so it's a whole bunch of people who are attempting to manage another group of people. It's a management. It's the way they see it. They see it as almost like a sheep. They're herding the sheep. The way that they're, you know, they need to be told what to do. They need to be engineered in a way. So that social engineering is something that is a controlled planning of how people are going to interact socially, right? As opposed to the opposite of that, which is more of a natural progression of social, which would be a culture, the natural the natural progression of culture into its various ways of socioeconomics and everything. Now, what we're getting into right now is more of the subversion, more of the nefarious, the sinister type of goals that people have. And one of the things that you keep running into when you look into this is things like subliminal messaging. I really like talking about subliminal messaging because I've had the most luck in my own personal life with showing people a little bit, you know, underneath the veil of this whole facade that has been put in front of people's face. And if you can just show them a little bit of these, you know, it's been going on since the days of the creation of all these mediums that we've been talking about, newspaper, you know, it's been going on for a long time. It's basically propaganda. So the propaganda that comes out in the social engineering is sometimes hard to see. And, you know, the advertisers are openly talking about it all the time. I'm sure you've seen these old 1920 ads with the doctors recommending smoking cigarettes. That's way more in your face. But then you go to the movies and you start to see previews for movies and they're saying catchwords and then you start to realize that they have a deep understanding of the way that words and images can enter the human mind. So social engineering has a lot to do with the subversion of what is natural and the insertion of a different hidden agenda. And so another thing that is important to talk about as far as when we're talking about movies and things, as far as my research goes, a lot of the social engineering started to take form during the couple world wars. And it didn't just happen in America. If you look into, there's a couple of really good documentaries from Dennis Wise. You'll have to look into his YouTube channel. He's got a whole series all about cultural Marxism and how this was taking place in Weimar Germany. So in Weimar Germany, you see this huge explosion with pornography and with all these things we keep talking about with the destruction of the family, all this propaganda. They get kicked out of Germany. They come to America. And what happens is they buy these people who are also heavily involved in banking. They come to America. They set up these same social engineering platforms for them to be able to get a stronghold with the newspapers, the as much media outlets as they can. Obviously, we know they get involved in the Time magazine, all the magazines, and then obviously they start Hollywood. There's a couple of really good documentaries I recommend you go watch on Hollywood about the Zionist influence on Hollywood, and you'll start to notice a whole bunch of coincidences with who all the people who are in all these industries that we're going to be talking about social engineering, these same groups are involved in. And there's no way it's a coincidence. So, you know, all you people out there that are just saying, oh, it's the Freemasons, oh, it's the Illuminati, whatever. These are catchwords that people can hide behind. I'm interested in, you know, naming the actual people. And I know it's a very controversial thing. We're not supposed to talk a whole lot about it. They don't like it. They run all these social media platforms as well. So you're going to hear me refer to these people a lot of times. One thing they have in common is Zionism. So the Zionist influence of propaganda that Zionism and also cultural Marxism is very much intertwined. So of course the whole, you wonder, okay, what is this social engineering agenda and what are they putting it in? They're putting it in their own material. They engineered the American dream. That's the sad part. When you start to dive down this rabbit hole, you start to realize the American dream was kind of given to us by Zionists. You know, they kind of engineered our whole entire social platform. So of course, when we're talking about movies and TV shows, of course, it's one of the biggest platforms we have today. It's the entire entertainment industry. Okay. And yeah, as far as when we're talking specifically about social engineering, all the things that they got kicked out of Germany for end up getting inserted into the American economy around the same time. So I think that's really pertinent. I think people need to pay attention to this and try to link all these dots together, because the social engineering thing is intertwined with all the same people we keep talking about in the Frankfurt School, all the cultural Marxist stuff, all the CIA, all the stuff that we keep talking about over and over again. So let's just get that out of the way. That's important to know right off the bat. Now, as far as what the end goal is of this social engineering, as far as I'm concerned, is what they're doing is they're inverting that, which is the way I look at it is, okay, this group of social engineers are our enemies, essentially. Okay. That's why this documentary that I referred to before from Dennis Wise is called Communism in the Back Door, Communism by the Back Door, I think it's called. But it's like, how did these guys infiltrated our economy from the inside and started to control us from the inside out? And that's what we're seeing today, is we're seeing all the after effects. And, you know, it wasn't very obvious in the very beginning. The early shows, like we talk about, the early movies, the early television shows, had a really, our culture was at least reflected in that a little bit. The culture that we had, our strong culture, our highly K-selected values, more of a conservative type of a thought process when you viewed the family, was reflected early on. And then over time, it starts to become what they call it progressive, right? Which is the opposite of what it actually is. So these people, these groups of people who seek to engineer us socially, have been slowly boiling the frog over time. And that's what we're seeing today. And that's why when you look at Netflix, it's overwhelming that you get all the social engineering right in your face. It isn't even hidden anymore. And I'll pass it off to somebody else, but I'd like to return to some of the Netflix documentaries in a little bit and talk more about those.
All right. Well, thanks, Caleb, for muting right then, right when your dog was getting yippy over there. Thanks. So good grief. So, Netflix is a good one. You know, we see a promotion of, oh, the humans are the plague. That's a big one that they're promoting right now. Every show that you see these days has to have a homosexual in it. They're trying to normalize that as much as possible. It's, you know, obvious and simple eugenics. For those of you who think it's just freedom and you should, you know, jump in a rear end somewhere and that's wonderful. It's just simple eugenics. It's not living in truth. It's pleasure seeking rather than trying to build a family and future for your family survival. It doesn't take a whole lot of thinking to figure out that your family tree ends when you practice that type of behavior, as well as the transgender agenda and them creating, you know, 70 plus or however many new genders these days. That's obvious social engineering for anybody who spends a couple of minutes thinking about it with common sense. And not looking at it emotionally. Of course, those who consider themselves homosexual or transgender or whatever probably get very defensive hearing that. But think about it. Does your behavior promote the longevity of your family and for seven generations out? Or do you have to promote socialism because your family tree is wiped out and you're not going to have any kids or grandkids or anything else, and that's it? So you have to, you know, promote leftist agendas and whatnot, you know, for your own survival into old age. And of course, then there's the transhumanism is heavily promoted these days. Everywhere we look, Elon Musk, Google, what's his name from Google now? Oh, shoot. Ray Kurzweil. And, you know, all of these guys, they're all involved in this stuff, but, you know, it's all of this stuff is social engineering. Also, if we think of, you know, and I did the series Music, Mind Control, and Psychobiology with Dr. Hans Utter. And if we think of even the most basic types of rock music, any type, you know, rock music, hip hop, it can even be done in classical music for that matter. But all of this can be used toward social engineering. If they're promoting sex, rampant sex, or hypersexualization and drug use and rock and roll, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you can guarantee it's social engineering. They're not there to promote the longevity of your family. They're promoting you get caught up in garbage to screw up your life. They want you at the ayahuasca circles on Sunday and the mushroom parties on Tuesday and the LSD parties on Thursday and the drinking parties on Saturday, you know, and wash and repeat.
Spending your weekends working on building your cool thing to bring to Burning Man.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think the spend every couple of days.
Spend 9 months building, or, you know, 11 months building your silly thing to burn up at Burning Man.
Yeah.
So that all of that energy is wasted and goes up in flames rather than going toward your family, your future, and all of that. So it all literally goes up in smoke. That's the whole idea with those things. And of course, that is all Satanism, and that might seem crazy to a lot of people who don't get it yet. We do plan to go into those agendas more and more. And Caleb and I, you know, probably we've been planning to do a show on laying out what the left and right are and how they impact things. And Rockin' Mr. E has a good show on his channel that breaks it down. That's only about 15 minutes. I recommend checking that out. But we'll be going into that type of stuff more soon. Pornography, all of this stuff. And we're going to do a show on pornography soon. I had Gary Wilson on some years ago, and we did a couple of shows on porn. People can check that out in the archives on the Logos Media website. He has gone away from doing that. He's working more behind the scenes now. I did reach out to him last week. And excuse me, so he recommended a couple of good guys who are on the forefront right now that we can bring onto the show to talk about porn and what that is really about. You know, and I used to live out in the Simi Valley, San Fernando Valley area, and that is the porn capital of the world. And of course, it is the same Zionist, if you want to say it politely, tribe that runs, you know, the huge majority of that out there. It doesn't take a lot to see it if you, you know, get past the scary labels that are tossed around to, you know, prevent people from even looking behind that. So, Chris, what do you want to...
Well, speaking of Netflix, and this is a question I have for you, actually. I was curious if you had a chance to watch they had a series about, I think it was called Wormwood, about the... the Dr. Olson, who was supposedly fell out the window, CIA thing. And I was wondering what you thought of that, because I found that to be, you know, anything I find these types of retellings always very interesting. And I wonder, you know, they give you so much, but are they giving you...
sorry to cut you short there.
No, it falls into your research, though. So
well, here's the thing is I tried to have Eric Wilson on the show years ago and he declined. Of course, Eric Wilson is the son of, Eric Olson is the son of, Frank Olson, who the CIA killed under CIA agent, who was it, White, I think, killed him. Of course, I don't have the brain database up here. But, and even that's questionable because, you know, I've since exposed Hank Alberelli involved in a lot of the stuff and his connections to the Trine Day cell. And so it's, you know, we have to get in and verify each one of his, hold on a second, Olson, each one of his citations, because, you know, he was a lawyer for the Jimmy Carter White House right when, you know, in 79 when they broke MKUltra to the public. So Of course, Eric Olson is Frank Olson's son. And then, you know, Eric Olson gets a contract with Netflix. Now, to be honest, I'm going to, you know, I've had, you know, probably a 50 to 100 emails, at, you know, with people asking me if I've watched it. And number one, it was on Netflix. That's, you know, that was the first red flag. You know, it's like, all right, how much did the CIA pay off? And this is just my own opinion, pay off Eric Olson to promote this stuff. And then we had Winona Ryder doing her series last year on the fake MK Ultra stuff, and, you know, making it about, you know, underground tunnels and all of this stuff, the underground world, they invert all
I'd
that.
I'd also like to chime in on this a bit.
Yeah,
just a second. Stuff. But, you know, unfortunately, and maybe I should watch it, I did cancel my Netflix account, so I didn't watch the Wormwood series. Interesting title, though. Wormwood is a psychedelic that they make absinthe with. But I am 99.9% certain, without even seeing it, that it's going to be more spin and misdirection. Go ahead, Steven.
Yeah, and you would be correct in thinking that it's going to be more spin and misdirection, because I did check out a couple episodes of that. And from what I've seen, I'm starting to think is that, just like with these tiny videos on Facebook that have shown to give people a false sense of being informed, a lot of these Netflix documentaries are also aimed at that as well. And so people will get these heavily, like these heavy convictions about these topics, of which they feel they know, like they feel like they know a lot, but they really
they're TV educated.
And so I spent 2 years reading through most of the MK Ultra documents myself.
Yeah, I've read most of them myself too.
They're all out, and I think there's even a couple of thousand more that are about to be released or just got released.
Black Vault or something like that, supposedly got a hold of them.
Yeah, John Greenwald, he does a lot of work getting documents released through the FOIA requests. So he's gotten, I think he claims millions of documents.
And it was John D. Marks who is the, let me just pull him up because he's important to know.
The main point would just be that it gives people a false sense of confidence.
Even reading the primary documents out of MKUltra, that's, you know, why I put everything into the database so I can look at their backgrounds. Because when we look at John D. Marks, who wrote The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, of course, published in 1979, and I've shown in my article, Spies in Academic Clothing, that Marks was actually in cahoots with Gordon Wasson and with a lot of these other guys, but he was actually originally the assistant to the director, and then I think later he actually became the director to the Bureau of Intelligence and Research. You know, so here we have an agent who is supposedly exposing all of this stuff, but you can see when you go through all of the MKUltra files that Marks and the, you know, CIA, whomever, inserted some stuff. But, you know, Marks has, in the introduction, Marks has Gordon Wasson and all these guys helping him. And I, here's the Spies in Academic Clothing article, but if you go into that, you can find, and there's John G. Fuller. Let me just get down here to Marks a little bit. But you can find that he was right in the introduction working with Sidney Cohen, working with Gordon Wasson, and working with a lot of these people. So here is my exposure of The Search for the Manchurian Candidate. But in the book, you know, he gets Gordon Wasson to help him write the section on Gordon Wasson, and doesn't mention that, you know, Gordon Wasson was just duped into, you know, working with Subproject 58. But, you know, it's all in there that these guys were all agents. And here Tim Leary even admits, our undercover agents in Los Angeles, admitting that he and Ken Kesey are agents, Oscar Janiger, Sidney Cohen. These guys were all agents. These guys are the CIA agents, folks.
Jan, the people that we run into, you'll show them all of this, and then they'll be like, well, Jan, you haven't even watched Wormwood on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you haven't watched Wormwood, even though I'm, you know, a world-leading expert on MKUltra and the only one that I have come across who's told the truth on any of this stuff.
So it's interesting just to see the Dunning-Kruger effect in action.
Well, ignorant and unaware, absolutely. So,
how do we go about communicating this information to people that are?
Well, that's like, you know, that, and that's exactly what we're doing. But you know, there's only what do we have, like 150 viewers right now?
Because some of the social engineering is about developing these convictions so that people really, they do buckle down on those beliefs and they hold true to that so that they don't really get into other areas of their
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, here, just to show folks, this is that citation here. This, and it just disappeared, but this is from the introduction of, where did it just go to now? This is from the introduction of John D. Marks's book. And right in there, so Marty Lee wrote Acid Dreams. Sidney Cohen was the psychologist that gave the approval for killing Aldous Huxley with a massive overdose of drugs and LSD and stuff by Laura Huxley. And that's a whole other scandal that I think deserves a paper on its own. Humphrey Osmond, whom, of course, was Huxley's personal doctor. Albert Hoffman, who was CIA and French intelligence and the fake inventor of LSD. I don't think at all that he invented it. Here's Sidney Cohen here, and here's Gordon Wasson. And then Dr. James Moore was the guy who went on the trip with Wasson. So these are all the CIA agents, in my humble opinion, that write and control the narrative. And then John D. Marks actually had Gordon Wasson write the section on himself in John D. Marks's book. So, of course, you know, it's like the CIA writing about the CIA. So, you know, if you want to see how all these inner workings work and how they do the social engineering on an academic level, read the full Spies in Academic Clothing article.
Yeah.
All right, Caleb, your turn. Sorry for my long blab there.
Real quick, those documents are on his website.
Okay, yeah, just let Steve finish up. What's that, Steven?
Just real quick, so people are asking where we can find these documents, Spies in Academic Clothing and whatnot. It's on Logos Media, Jan's website here.
Yeah, you know, and I actually got a Harvard PhD, you know, and there's an Oxford PhD who wrote Mind Blown About the Work, loves it, and he experienced the same thing at Oxford, and so we'll hopefully be having him on soon to discuss all of that stuff. We also had a Harvard, I think he may have gotten his master's there, but he was still a doctor, but he had a hard time finding the footnotes. So for everybody who has a hard trouble, each footnote is actually, it's highlighted there. And if you click on that down here under endnotes, you'll see that there are 195 endnotes listed here that show you exactly where the citations are. I didn't make them up. I didn't channel them from Uranus or anywhere else. You can actually look them all up and verify that that's what these people did on all of this stuff. Go ahead, Caleb.
So more on the topic of social engineering here and Netflix. I wonder if people have noticed the same thing I've noticed. When you look through the documentaries, like one of the first things as you start to learn that the world may be a little different than you're told, you start to look into all the documentaries you can find. So what I first started doing, you know, I think it was like 2009, I started watching as many Netflix documentaries as I could. Yeah. I broke both
Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist was on there. I broke both my legs in a motocross accident. So I didn't have anything else to do but sit and just watch documentaries for 6 months at a time. And I considered myself somewhat a little bit red pill. So I fell for some of these traps. So don't think that I'm talking down on anybody who falls for some of this stuff. You know, I get it. You know, we all have to wake up at some point, and you know, these are hard to swallow pills. So, what I wanted to say is now that I've checked out so many of the different documentaries and tried to see what the agenda is here and why they popularize a whole bunch of certain topics. One thing that I've noticed, especially with even intellectuals that I've spoken to that seem to be pretty smart people, they all fall for, well, not all of them, but many of them will fall for this agenda that I keep seeing, which is kind of, I would describe it as the humanist agenda, where they're trying to convince people that, this goes along with the global warming stuff. They're trying to convince people to be anti-human. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's almost like you're propping up nature and animals above humans. And you know, it's to the point where, you know, they've got everybody thinking that humans can be parasitic. Now, there's a big difference between viewing people as consumers and viewing people as producers. If you view people as producers, then every human life is a potential gift, right? And if you view the humanity as a sort of a parasite, then of course you get a lot of negative consequences for this. And this is advantageous for the social engineers.
Yeah, it's simple eugenics again. I mean, you think about it. Okay, well, you know, if we're a parasite, then I don't want to have kids, and then my family tree's done, and then I've saved the planet that my family won't be here to live on anymore.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant genius, brilliant. Yeah, you thought that one through really well.
Yeah. And, you know, for some of the people that are into psychology, just on a real super deep note, I would call it projection at its basis, because if you think about it, you know, these people that are pushing these agendas are the parasites.
So often. Yeah.
Often. Yeah.
Yeah. Often that's the case. Yeah.
So, you know, so they're spinning this whole idea that, oh, it's all of humanity, and all of humanity are these useless, mindless eaters. Now, obviously, the RK stuff comes into play really well if you understand the RK stuff. If you don't know about RK, go check out, read the book. Don't listen to all the different talking heads trying to give you an idea of what RK is. That's me included. I can give you a breakdown. I'd like to do a show on it someday, but get the primary sources if you can. It's way different if you get the primary sources than if you just go listen to, you know, whoever is out there talking about it, spinning it in their own way. So the whole RK thing is involved in the whole social engineering thing, because if they import a whole bunch of R's, rabbits, so to speak, into the culture, if they try to get this social engineered into the population where it's just, you know, screw like rabbits, have as many babies as you can, doesn't matter what the environment can handle. And on top of that, you know, you spin all these different socioeconomic strategies like communism in there. Well, it's perfect for growing the government. So all this stuff comes full circle. It all fits in. The puzzle pieces are all right where they need to be. The social engineers have this bigger goal, right? So you talk to somebody who goes and watches tons and tons of Netflix documentaries. They see these documentaries, they'll tell you, well, our biggest problems is pollution. Our biggest problems are, you know, X and Y and Z. Now, don't get me wrong, pollution is a problem. But I would definitely say that when we're talking about pollution, I think we need to distinguish a difference between the petrochemical industry. If you're going to go after the petrochemical industry and how they run, you know, and these are the same Zionists who are running the whole petrochemical industry. I mean, obviously people know about Rockefeller and Rothschild and all these people whose roles have been into oil and the production of plastic and all this stuff. And I'm definitely against that. But go back and watch Jan's shows on abiogenic oil, because once you watch
Greg is probably in the audience too. He listens a lot.
Yeah, go check those shows out, because I, you know, I'm a critical thinker and I watch those shows with a critical, you know, the first thing that is the biggest red flag when you think about the social engineering involved in the whole spin of oil is A, they try to make it so that you believe that it's scarcity.
It's a pollutant.
That's what they do. They if it's scarce, then they can justify.
It's not the second most abundant liquid on the planet, and then it's a pollutant.
Fossil fuel is a coin.
Right, it's a pollutant.
It's coined by.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, and then along with that, the whole idea of that it being a scarce substance is also hand in hand with dinosaur blood or dinosaur bones or whatever, fossils, whatever. Fossil fuels is a term coined.
And we can do a whole show on the Yeah, the whole fake dinosaur thing.
With the dinosaur logo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
well said, Steve.
Real quick, I was just going to end with saying that. So, as far as the Netflix documentaries, so they have nets set up for you to fall in. Right when you climb out of one of these nets, you fall right into another, and then you fall right into another, and you just keep falling into these traps. And that's what's involved with. That's why I believe learn the critical thinking, learn the trivium, and you know, people will say, "Well, I love watching documentaries." Ah. Well, one of the biggest problems you have then is YouTube and all these other platforms that we're using to try to figure out, to try to do research and find some good documentaries here and there, they're all being shut down.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they defunded our recent Trivium show. It was, and then they reviewed it and found it was too controversial to monetize. And YouTube also demonetized our recent family show.
I'm just going to quick read off some of these Netflix statistics. They're kind of interesting. So Netflix is established in 1997. It's got about 3,500 employees. It has about 130. These are statistics from 2018. It's got about 130 million subscribers. That's a decent portion of people. Estimated that it reaches 300 million people. So that's a good size. Like if you got 300 million people all together doing one thing, that's, you know, if each of those people gives you a dollar, you got $300 million. And it's estimated to be like an $11 billion industry with the revenue in 2017. The projected one for this year was to be $15 billion. So the percentage of all those people, percentage of U.S. adults that stream it daily is 23. So it's almost like one in four people are watching it every single day. And out of 70% of those, they binge watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So out of each of one of those four, you got about 3/4 chance, almost of 70% chance of doing every single day watching it and binge watching it when you have the time to. So that could be quite influential in one's life if you're sitting there binge watching Netflix every day.
Absolutely.
And they're absorbing the content. So yeah.
And they're now they're a content creator now as well. So they used to just provide movies. They would it was like you would send they would send them in the mail and then you could start streaming them, and now they're making their own stuff, and you have to, and I think that's a big part of their
I don't want to get into anything too graphic at all, but Chris, I know that you've looked into the explicit cinema before, and the new Netflix, a lot of their original stuff, it has straight up pornography in the show. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, they got sued, right? Recently for doing a film in South America and Argentina or somewhere that actually showed a young girl engaged in a sexual act, and they got hit with a pretty hard lawsuit for that.
So yeah, I was looking into some of that, and it's almost every single show that they produce, and almost every episode it has some sort of pornographic scene in it. So
yeah, I think that type of thing is being normalized now. It's being normalized right across the board in a lot of adult comics and things like that, cartoons, Archer and things along those lines, Rick and Morty and things along those lines, you know, where it's for adults, but it still appeals to the child in some way. It's a weird thing. But I think one of the things about social engineering that we're talking about really is we're identifying tactics, you know, that are being used. And they probably tactics that have been used for over and over and over again, tried and tested through the print media, like you said, through plays and live performances, down to where you have the films and the talkies and TV. Radio, of course, now the internet, YouTube, and the content creators are the ones, they provide for you.
We lost your audio there.
Chris, you cut out.
I apologize.
It sounds like you're back now. I don't know what you did there. Nope, we lost your audio, Chris.
How's that?
There it
better?
Is. Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
So I apologize, guys. Yeah, so
now,
I was just
now
saying.
Now you're hot. You need to turn your volume back wherever it was.
I apologize. I'll back down. Is it still too hot?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying that I think that that's a thing that, you know, the Trivium helps you identify these tactics so that you can question what the motivation is. Because, you know, ultimately the people are motivated to do these things for a reason, and they're motivated to, you have to kind of understand what that motivation is and what the message they're trying to tell you. It's that whole, like, you know, that rhetorical triangle idea, you know, what's the message you're trying to give me here? And once you kind of realize it's not necessarily going to be beneficial, it's going to appeal to things that maybe that you are curious about, maybe things that are titillating and such, but often it's leading you astray, in my opinion. It has for me in my personal experience. So getting back on track.
You know what, and just really quickly here, you know, before we go to you, Steve, and I've been wanting to do this for about 10 minutes now. But, Steve, why don't you give out your address so people can donate to you directly?
That is at, here, let me pull it up real quick so I don't get it wrong. My PayPal info is.
All right, here, while you're looking for that, Caleb, why don't you give out yours?
mick.caleb@gmail.com. And I like any messages you want to send me. If you send me some shekels, I usually just throw them straight towards my
shekels.
my getting a better camera, whatever, my computer setup, just so I can do better shows. I appreciate anything. Thanks.
And
yeah, that's the paypal.me/presidenttrip, just one word.
And why don't you post that up in the chat as well so people can find that?
For some reason, I don't have moderator status, so I've got to.
You should. I thought I gave it to you, but we'll make sure you add it. I thought I added everybody a while ago, actually, and probably Chris needs to be added there as well. Chris, give out yours.
Yeah, the Mayv, themayv @gmail.com. And again, yeah, if you want to just send any information or, you know, just to say hi, I'd love to hear from you all. So thanks so much.
And throw some donations their way. Hey, throw some donations our way. I think also thanks to Vivian and Polly for their donations to the show tonight. I really appreciate it. Anybody else who wants to throw up some shekels, hit the dollar sign down there. We appreciate the support. We can't keep doing all of this exposure without everyone's support. Obviously, yeah. Them defunding my channel. If anybody noticed last week, a perfect example of how YouTube screws with my channel. I hit 57,000 subscribers today. So when I had Adam Green on the show, he had 700 to 800 live viewers with 39,000 subscribers, and I had under 140 live viewers with 57,000 live subscribers, and my copy has 3,000 views right now, whereas his has like 10 or 20,000 right now. You know, so, you know, it just goes to show that they are completely manipulating the numbers, throttling my channel, etc. Still, so, you know, it's just a constant game. I mean, them demonetizing shows on the Trivium and Family, that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, Changing Images of Family episode 1 was demonetized for talking about them attacking family. Get, you know, go figure. Even Family isn't approved for advertising now.
Well, if you talk about it, you know, if you talk about it in a certain light, if you're going to demonize it, if you're going to talk about how, you know, family wars, or, you know, how it's backstab your brother or your father or whatever it would be, you know, then they'll let that go on YouTube all day long, you know. So
any kind of degenerate stuff, or you know, a music star shaking their ass or taking their clothes off or anything, and that's all good.
But bring your child to a pride parade and videotape that with naked men running around, and that's going to be no problem.
Absolutely
things
correct.
Like that.
Yeah. So real quick before we move on.
Just, you know what? I'm going to give it to you a second. But, you know, and I want to say that, you know, we've also figured out, and Caleb and I, we're going to be doing a show on this soon, but we've figured out what vampirism really is. It is real, folks. And so Caleb and I are going to be putting together a show on that soon. And, you know, we'll be sharing everything, hopefully be doing a roundtable or an Unspun episode on that in the coming weeks. But it's pretty mind-blowing what we've discovered independently. Caleb and I talked about this today. I was all excited because I've been figuring it out, watching True Blood and all these different shows. And I'm like telling Caleb, hey, dude, I figured it out. And he's like got all the same data points already. So, you know, that'll be good. Go ahead, Caleb.
Yeah, that'll be a deep, dark show. If people want to jump down that rabbit hole, we'll have to put something together for them in the
talk
future.
About quick defunding, quick defunding of an episode, you know, demonetizing it. They will no doubt demonetize that one.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I just have decided, you know, if it's true, I need to expose whatever is true, because I don't want to have any hidden agendas. I don't want to not say what is true for any reason. I'm not scared of any of it. I just want to make sure we present the information in an aspect that is digestible for people. So we'll work on that. But so one thing real quick before I move on from the Netflix thing, I just wanted to mention that as far as I'm concerned, a lot of people are controversial about where the most mind control and social engineering is involved in what category. As far as I'm concerned, it's pretty much widespread across all categories. But one that's completely missed by most people is that comedy is one of the easiest subversive ways to get people into an idea by laughing and associating it with something really super funny. So if you watch a lot of the comedies, you'll see they'll increase the amount of all these other topics and try to twist them into a funny way of delivering them, so they stick in with you. And if you really think about it, it molds our culture so much more than you think. Everybody's running around telling jokes all the time and reciting movie lyrics to
it's
each other.
It's an abuse.
The comedy puts your guard down, you know, and we had even talked a couple years ago about changing the format of the show to a comedy bit to slip the bits of truth in there. But I used to hang out backstage, you know, a lot at the Comedy Store in LA back when I was friends with Joe Rogan back in the 2000s. And yeah, man, I mean, you know, back then I wasn't aware of it, but I can look back at all the times I was backstage and saw the shows and everything and what was going on there. And yeah, it's all definitely social engineering. You know, it's exactly. you slip that stuff in, throw out jokes on, you know, the Bible is all fake. It's not based on logos or truth. Don't read it. It's all nonsense. Hey, you know, let's tell lots of dick jokes and sell porno and, you know, anything iniquitous. That's what's good. That's what we need to sell. So, you know, it's just, you can see it when you're back there behind the scenes. And thanks also to Gokuchi for the throwing up the $10 super chat there. Anybody who wants to support the show, we got 169 people in there tonight and like three or four donations. We appreciate any support, and please share support with these guys too. And I need to get the Logos Roundtable website up soon. I'll try to get that done this week. If anybody wants to help throw some support for that would be helpful to get that done as well.
Yep. So can I just quick go back to this television thing?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting note, and Natty Nasty just commented saying anyone who is degenerate is seen as cool or savage.
And
this is a very interesting note from the television standpoint, because the first major institution was education, and that is what got the kids away from their family and got them into these abstract thinking realms of academic pursuits. But it quickly became that it was no longer about academic pursuits, and it was more about social reformation and getting these kids to believe and think a certain way to prepare them for a one world organization, because the world had been so torn apart by the wars between nations. So there's a few competing groups going for which philosophy is the best for that. But that's aside the point for right now. I just want to focus on TV's aspect here. So the kids are going to school for 8 hours a day, some kids in America, and when they come home, they get maybe an hour or two with their parents, and then they spend another 4 or 5 hours on television. And some kids don't even spend any time at all with their parents anymore. They just go straight to their either TV or their phone or their video games, or they, you know, do that. Or the other stuff, which is more obviously better, is like extracurricular sports, you know, like being physically active and staying in shape and playing games that are overall beneficial to you, you know,
learning an instrument or something like that. Yeah.
Learning an instrument. Yeah. Something that builds that will benefit you later on instead of, you know, crying at a video game for a couple hours at night and then going to bed and going to school the next day all day, you know, you're just itching to play that game or whatever, and you're not really paying attention in school. So that's another very interesting aspect, again, taking away from the family. And I think it gives some parents a feeling of liberation that their kid, you know, their kid's not doing anything bad. He could be doing worse things than sitting around becoming a vegetable watching TV, and that's just on the parents.
My son's in the next room recording us. Learning how to be a little recorder for the show here.
Good.
There's definitely good things that kids could work on, and families can be together and do together to teach the kids on how to prepare later on for life, you know, as opposed to watching. And this gets back to Natty Nasty's comment, gets to watching cartoons. And so something that I was looking into is the rise of hypnotism in culture and hypnotic studies going through the schools first and then into the cartoons, or maybe even in the cartoons first and then to the schools. The lines are kind of blurry as of where I'm at right now looking into it. But the cartoons, especially in the 80s and 90s, is when there's a lot of these crazy postmodernist, just wild cartoons that are off the walls. And I've even gone back just to look at some of them, and I can't believe that I personally watched them as a kid, that my supervisors and my guardians let me participate in watching some of that stuff, because it's just wild, you know, maybe from my viewpoint. But some of it is just stuff like, you're gonna let a kid watch this instead of, I don't know, doing anything else. It's ridiculous. So, well, you know, I just wanted to say that TV and video games take over instead of the parents.
Well, you know, I had that interview with Dr. Leonard Sachs, a month or two ago. And
great interview.
Yeah, he discussed in that that parents see a dramatic improvement in children's behavior just by blocking the Disney Channel and not letting the kids watch the Disney Channel, because that's, you know, the iCarly, all these shows, you know, there's no parents. The kids are, smart. It's like the Homer Simpson thing. You have Lisa, you know, super smart, smarter than Homer, you know, the white father, he's just, you know, dumb and degenerate, et cetera. So when families cut off these shows like Disney, Disney's one of the worst purveyors of social engineering out there for kids, and selling the degenerate behavior to kids. And, you know, they go, you know, following Miley Cyrus through her whole life. And, you know, pretty soon they're, they're trans fluid getting poured into an engine somewhere, you know?
And so they throw up a lot of these icons, and they do it. Jan did a great job with Hans exposing it in his music, Mind Control and Psychobiology series. But in the cartoons too, Chris mentioned Archer earlier. There's people get all sorts of tattoos of like Disney princess characters and like Aladdin and even all the 90s Cartoon Network cartoons that are extremely influential on people. People get like Invader Zim tattoos and Invader Zim hoodies and all posters.
You
know, people go crazy on each of these little tiny cartoons that they just identified with so much. And it's a complete segue out of reality because it's based on nothing. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting art style to a degree, but beyond that, it's just social engineering to get these kids to identify with these wacky, out of this world characters that are just arguably schizophrenic to some degree, and to get these kids to be somewhat schizophrenic in their life.
Yeah, you know, going back to the, you know, to the normalization of pedophilia, Holly says, have you watched Sam Hyde called Adult Swim? It's all pedos on his channel. I mean, you know, like, what the hell is this stuff? I mean, you know, when are the alpha males going to come out with the shotguns again, you know, and stand up to this crap?
Yeah. I think that there's something to be said with, you know, with my generation. I know a lot of people my age that are still, they love the stuff they loved as a child. You know, they love Spider-Man and Superman and Batman. When those movies come out, you know, they're the ones who are there, not the children. You know, it's appealing to these people. They're the ones who feed it to their kids. Those characters, they have a lot of sway with us, and I think they're used easily. You know, the comic book characters, especially, they're used as war propaganda back in the days. And I think they still are used for that type of thing. And what a huge market, massive market it is right now. So something to be said for that. You know, the itching away, the chipping away of all the fabric that held us together, and to their own. These tactics are very effective, but they need to be done over, I think, over a period of time. I think to get the things to the Sodom and Gomorrah level that we're heading I don't think it would work right out of the gate. I think you have to chip away over generations, you know, over decades. And you can see, you know, even we were saying earlier, the amount of the attention span people don't have as they used to read a book, or, you know, they need short little videos and things like that. And often these things to signify that they're correct. You see these little videos on Facebook, the virtue signaling videos, and or little memes and things like that. So we're in a meme world. This is the world where we live in these days. So, yeah, that's how it seems to me. So social engineering at its best, right? Wrapped up in a meme.
Mm-hmm. Memes. So. On that note, I wonder if people have ever thought about along the same lines of comedy, like we were talking about earlier. I wonder if people have thought about the nature of certain jokes that catch on throughout history. I was really interested because one of the most popular jokes, groups of people to make jokes about, are blondes. I got to thinking, the okay, why
blonde and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm looking into it. Where did this blonde joke originate, and what's the deal here? Because it turns out, if you Google it, you'll find, I don't know, 15 articles talking about how blondes, they actually, what was it? One of these universities actually went out and did a study with 1,100 Americans. Gave them all IQ scores, just women, based on their hair color, divided them up into brunettes, redheads, dark black hair, and blondes. And, you know, I know IQ tests are really controversial for a lot of people. Maybe someday we can get into that deep topic of IQ tests and whatnot. But what I found is that blondes are actually the smartest group of all of them. By a narrow margin, but it's like, okay, where did the stereotype come from? Well, you start to realize a movie back in like the
1925 or something like that.
Mid 1920s. Talking about they cast, of course.
Justin Lee in the chat has already figured it out. He's going to tell you Pollock's next.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing. Right after I talked about the blondes, I was going to talk about the Pollocks. But the blondes, you're like, okay, what is... So here's the deal. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of jokes that you can kind of see that stuck with us from the beginning of our culture, and they're still around. It's like, some of them make sense. Some of them don't. Okay, so some of them are stereotypical jokes, and some things are funny because they're true. And then the rest of them, some of them aren't funny and kind of offensive to some people. So you're like, what's the deal here? What's the agenda behind, you know, the social engineering behind where these jokes come from? Well, who made the movie? We talk about who are producing these movies. Well, why do they hate blonde people? And why are they making jokes about blondes that aren't true? Maybe if it was true, like if we're you know, making jokes about blondes, and we actually have real world examples of how they're just, you know, maybe that would be a different story. But when you look into some of them, especially like the Polish thing, like the Polish people obviously got a bad rap from the social engineers, because Poland, obviously nowadays is a little bit different than it used to be back in the past. But of course, during the wars, who's going to war against Poland? And you know, you find out it's the same. I hate to sound like a broken record, but you see the same trends, the same people who are, you know, social engineering all the Hollywood movies and giving us this culture. They're also doing it with our jokes. So I don't know if anybody's thought about that, but think more about that and let me know what you think. One thing I was, I came up with kind of a solution in my head that made a little bit of sense. I wonder what the people in the chat think about this. Go ahead and start time stamping and recording a lot of these examples that we're talking about. Once you start noticing it, because I'm sure a lot of you guys already notice it, but if you still watch TV, I don't recommend watching it in the first place. However, like I said in the
beginning, unless you're studying it, you know, that would be the only valid reason to watch it is to study their crap.
Exactly. In the beginning of the show, I was mentioning how I like to study the subliminal messaging, you know, and shit, you want to talk about social messaging, subliminal messaging, look in Disney. We definitely see Disney has some of the most subliminal messages of any of, at least the ones that are easy to spot for adults. Now, start timestamping this stuff, start recording it. Let's archive it and put it out there in compilations. It works great as far as I'm concerned, because people, once you see all of them right next to each other, it really makes you go, okay, what is their agenda here? What's going on here? You know, and if you, I don't know if you guys
Seen, you know, you mean like murdering all the, killing off all the blondes in Europe and attacking all the blondes in Europe right now with the Muslim invasion. And, does that all play into all of this whole agenda? By golly. Sorry, I just had to make it super obvious there for
If it's Disney, it's pushing the social justice narrative. I believe they're pushing that heavily. They purchased Star Wars. They interjected that into the Star Wars mythos. They purchased Marvel. Next thing you know, we have a female Thor, even though the character's name is Thor, but for some reason they had to give the name and the powers to a female. They have different ethnic groups take individuals, characters taken over other people, just, you know, because you have to, everything is now fluid, right? So it's very interesting, the social justice angle that seems to be coming heavily out of that whole Disney, ABC, Marvel comics. They admitted that that going that route was not necessarily doing a good move. And then he had the person who made that comment, if I recall correctly, had to retract the comment because
of, you know, it's super simple to kill the social engineering getting into your home. You stop watching the TV.
Yeah.
You stop playing the stupid rock music that you know, grew up with, you know, that's repeated every day ad infinitum for the rest of your life. The same stupid songs over and over. My goodness. Really? Thank you. Perrier Man and Polygonal Construction for throwing up a couple of $5 donations. Please also toss the guys. You know what? Just really quick, why don't you, Chris, give out your email donation address again?
Yeah. The Mave. Yeah, it's themave at gmail.com, themayv. Thank you very much.
Steve?
At gmail.com.
Yeah, I've been commenting it here in the chat, but it's paypal.me/presidenttrip.
Caleb.
Got it. mick.caleb@gmail.com.
And I will try to get that website up this week, guys, so that we, you know, they can just go on there and donate to whomever they wish during the show. You know, how much further do you guys want to go? Should we wrap it up here, or do you guys want to continue on for, say, another 15 minutes?
Yeah, we could do another 15. I mean, it would just be, again, just to kind of reiterate what you were just getting at, you know, just sort of stepping out of the fictional world and into a world of reality where instead of researching who's the main characters on Game of Thrones or whatever, research who's the main characters behind
memorizing the World Series scores or, you know, it's like this is I mean, you know, you might look cool with all your sports friends, but, you know, this is a distraction. You know, not to bash on sports fans, but it is a distraction. It is a form of social engineering. And the goal is to keep you focused on sports and not looking into what they're doing. So, you know, and now football is crashing because they're pushing the trans agenda and homosexual agenda and, you know, not willing to salute the flag, et cetera. You know, so, you know, people are leaving the sport in droves now, as they should be.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that since we're doing a show on social engineering, it's probably important that we mention just at least briefly how in the beginning this started out as, you know, you get this social engineering platform for the Industrial Revolution. They start using the bells. They start using the social engineering tactics of getting your mind to be turned into a submissive type of worker. And then that transfers over into the education system where the bell rings and you have a specific amount of time for each class. And if you're late, and you know, this translates into a frame of thinking. It's a frame, it's a box to trap your consciousness into thinking a specific way. And then you start to see this transfer over into the schedule for television shows. The television shows come on at a specific time, and then people get addicted to when, okay, I got to go watch my show. And then, you know, it's this 30 hours of television, and you finally get the conclusion of the show, of the story, as opposed to, you know, and a movie's 2 hours, but you know, the TV shows, they've got everybody on a schedule. You're really, you're just a cog in the wheel at that point. You're
so going to there too. Yeah. On note of names that should be mentioned while talking about social engineering, Pavlov comes up. He's famous for his dogs, less famous
for creating the school bell.
Less famous for his human experiments. And he had come to the conclusion that humans were only 1 degree harder to condition than dogs were. And that's on there. The scale goes way higher. So the guy
got a thumb down finally.
Really spearheading all the social engineering research for how to condition the human body. He had believed that it was just a little bit more difficult than training your dog. And for any dog owners, Caleb, I know you have a dog. It's not difficult to train a dog. And it's not difficult to train a human either.
Mm. So. Yeah, actually, as far as dog training goes, one of the things that the biggest thing I think people miss is that when you give a dog a reward, when it does something bad, you're programming it to do the bad thing. Most people have no idea.
Uh-oh.
Same thing with, I mean, I'm not a parent yet, but I plan on it. And I've done a lot of, at least as much observation as I can in my own life with my parents and with other people and their kids, to know that it at least is very similar where, you know, we got this millennium problem nowadays where for some reason they're having a really hard time coping with taking responsibility. They need safe spaces, you know, all
wow.
this
isn't that all the this truth. Stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I start to notice these things like, okay, people who have poorly trained pets, the same problem arises in these millennial issues. A poorly trained pet, if your pet is scared and in the corner and you go over and you pet it and you give it a treat to make it feel better because you're trying to be compassionate.
Well, you're trying to make yourself feel better because of the circumstance, right? You think it's the right thing to do.
Yes. So, you're perfectly correct to say that. Most people try to justify their actions by subverting or by projecting their consciousness onto the pet or the person. Meanwhile, they're, you know, that learned helplessness. Somebody just mentioned in the chat. That's exactly, there's a bunch of experiments that I looked into with dogs and how you can actually train them to become helpless. Well, you want them to get better. You want to train a dog correctly or even raise a kid well. You want to reward positive feedback. You give them positive feedback, reward positive behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, it's okay to, people are like, well, all you do is you don't want to raise a kid the wrong way. So you have to be all positive. Well, it's a game.
You have to have discipline.
You have to have discipline. So you have to consequences.
It doesn't mean you go beat your kid all the time either. I mean,
yeah,
you know, no, it's, you have to have some consequences for negative, and you have to have lots of positive, as many positive reinforcement as you can. However, what you'll notice with this whole social engineering link is that what we're doing today is we're rewarding. One example is welfare. You know, you'll go and you'll get a handout, and simply because you're playing the victim, right? So you're appealing to people's emotions, and so somebody else says, "Well, I feel bad for you," which is I feel bad. I'm not stone cold, right? But the better thing to do is to lift people up and to give, instead of give people fish, you teach them how to fish.
Right.
So the whole social engineering thing is the exact inversion of that, correct?
It is.
The social engineering thing that is taking place on a mass scale today is you're entitled. If anybody tells you, if your emotions are more important.
You're entitled, and your situation is everyone else's fault but your own.
Right. Yeah, you know,
there's all this blame casting and stuff going on. You see this with the Black Lives Matter. You see this with gay rights and the transgender movement. Everybody's situation, or you know, your problems, your position, your status in life is everyone else's fault but your own. You never want to look at yourself as the problem. You have to blame everybody else instead of realizing, wait a second, you know, if I change my behavior and start living in truth, start living in logos, then your problems are going to start, you know, minimizing and disappearing, and life will get a lot better and you'll be a lot happier in life. But if you're, you know, if you blame, you know, white males for everything that ever happened on the planet, you're an idiot and you're going to have a life filled with strife and you're never going to get things together.
Mm-hmm. Well, this kind it's, of what you're saying, the, I don't mean to...
Hold on, let's... Hold on. Let's let Chris go first.
The emotional reasoning abuse, the promotion and popularization of that. Go for it.
What Caleb was talking about and what really struck with me was a quote that I've heard Jan say a billion times, the Sir Thomas More quote about, you know, creating the criminal and then punishing them. And that is essentially what I think is happening.
It's too bad that Sir Thomas More was one of the founders of socialism and communist crap out there. But it's a great quote. I did recently take it off the Trivium website because he was such a communist idiot. But, you know, it's like take one good thing out of his utopian nightmare, you know.
But it's true that it seems to be an orchestrated thing where we've dumbed down the population through our education system, the Prussian base, the Common Core, all these types of these tactics used to remove people from their ability to find the truth or to find some type of certainty in any kind of situation, and that's a really sad thing, and I find that. That seems to be the goal of all these tactics, is to remove all of these little tethers that would keep you fixed to reality and to be able to laugh at a lot of these propositions that people are putting forth now, like flat earth or like the idea that you can be any one of a billion genders, or if I feel like a dolphin, you all have to adjust that to the fact that I wish to be a dolphin, and to these types of things, which are, you know, the emperor's new clothes type of idea, where we all have to suspend reality. That I think is the goal, where I just want to be, don't call me or don't tell me to do this, don't rape me or something, these slut walk women walking down the street naked with signs, and it's like it's lunacy, and this is being promoted, and I think it's being promoted in the education system and through our media and through the worshiping of stars and individuals, idols, as you said. You know, true shouldn't worship people. They should, you know, maybe admire people who do things that well, but the, you know, worshiping of people is not a good sign, man. And then they use that to try to influence you, and you have these stars showing up at this place here, giving you their opinion, and people take it very seriously. And I think that's leading you astray. So that's my two cents about that story. I yield.
Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. the education aspect is definitely true. There's all sorts of weird stuff that has been put into the system that is not at all to do with academic knowledge. It's all these weird social experiments like role playing and partaking in these mental games where, you know, we have to imagine that the four of us are on an island and there's no food and one of us has to decide on who to kill to eat because that's what we have to do to survive. And so
you can't take palm fronds and make a net because you can't weave shit and then catch
and
some
fish.
I
got all this documentation of these weird mental games that they would do in school to try and teach morality from a humanistic perspective without using the Bible at all or any kind of religion, because that was not looked favorably upon in the public schools. And so it's just weird. They put hypnotism into the schools in the 60s and got big in the 70s and 80s. And it's just odd. There's some, you know, like, where does hypnotism go into learning how to read and spell when half of the world only knows how to read and spell in the 70s and they're doing hypnotism in the 60s. It's just, you know, you can teach geography without having to get a kid to think that he's a frog for a little bit in order to teach him a lesson about where the rainforest is.
Or you know, that he's a ballerina and he's a girl because, you know, you're going to sell him some trans fluid.
So, I mean,
he's
that's
licking the green
humor.
Stuff off the driveway, you know.
That's just my humor. No, I don't know of any geography classes using hypnotism for that, but there are some very odd cases of hypnotism in the schools to get kids to partake in these ideas to try and figure out like who they are. And to like, there's also all sorts of weird spy stuff in governmental influences in the school. There's records of the schools telling kids not to tell their parents about any of the stuff that they learned at the school and to not tell their parents that they weren't told to tell their parents about the stuff at the schools. And so it creates like this generational gap where the parents and the kids are feeling super
and the music already creates a false generational gap that we expose in the Music Mind Control series. You know, when I was a kid, if you wanted to role play, you went and you put on some underoos and you ran around in the yard in your underwear with a sword or a stick or whatever, and you know, and that was the end of it. Today, you know, what the millennials do is, you know, they get everyone else to believe their neurotic thing, and they force everyone else to say you're Superman or you're Batman or gay man or whatever, right? You know, so, you know, but, you know, it's like, you know, what happened to the days when it was super simple? Go out, you know, put on your underoos or put on your Halloween costume and go run around the yard. You know, you don't have to force everybody else to believe your delusion.
It's just part of this mass hypnosis. Is what it is this mass spell that's been put on people where, and I've got people down the road living from me that I see their bumper sticker. It says, I'd rather be LARPing. Rather be out live action role-playing. Why? You could be doing so much more than indulging in fantasy.
So let's see, we're going to wrap it up here in about 2 minutes. Why don't we give out our donation addresses? Chris, you want to start again?
Thanks. Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. It's the Mave, T-H-E-M-A-Y-V @gmail.com. Thank you so much.
And you want to go, Steve?
Yeah, that's just paypal.me/presidenttrip.
And then, of course, people can go to logosmedia.com for mine or hit the super chat down there until the end of the show. Caleb, your turn.
Yeah, so it's M as in Mary, I-C-K dot C-A-L-E-B. Mick, like a derogatory slur for an Irishman. And that's @gmail.com. Please feel free to email me if you want any more of my research. I have tons of notes. I love sharing all this stuff. I got lots of citations. I have a good time talking to you guys too. So,
yeah, I basically just do this in all my free time whenever I can to collect this stuff. It's really interesting and it's kind of difficult because none of this educational history is really put together in one place yet. So you have to kind of piece it together from all over.
As far as I can tell, we're the only show out there. And what I've done in the years past has really been the only show to kind of coalesce all this. I see some spinoffs and some limited hangouts and whatnot, but you know, we provide you the trivium and tell you to go research and check all the citations on your own and whatnot. So, you know, don't believe us, don't add, you know, Verecundium us, go check the citations of the research that we put out and whatnot. Think for yourself. Don't think with fallacies. Don't think, you know, when you're using logic and critical thinking, that's not the time to think with emotion. When you're in bed with your wife, that's the time to think with emotion. You know, it's not to say emotions are bad. There's just times for it. So if you're, you know, if you're doing all your thinking and think that you're like, I've mentioned this one guy, and I get this all the time, you know, especially from millennial thinkers. But this guy, Chad, he sends me a note that, you know, I need to take his feedback on all of these heroes and whatnot in the past. And his opinions are just as valid as ours. And when we've spent, you know, over a decade or, you know, 12, 15 years researching all of this stuff, he's watched maybe Wormwood on Netflix or whatever, but, you know, his opinions are just as valid. These people think that their opinions are just as valid. Unless you've gone through the process of asking who, what, where, and when, and then filtering out any fallacies in your mind, any contradictions in your mind to understand why, and if you can't express how you came to a conclusion, we don't care about your opinions, you know? That's when your opinion really doesn't matter. If you've actually done some research and you can form an intelligent argument and you've had an original thought, that's when we want to hear from you. You know, but if you're just, you know, you want to give your opinion because your social engineering and mind control doesn't jive with the facts and research.
Because you haven't read it yet.
Right, that you haven't even read yet. I mean, you know, 99% of the attacks I get from people are from people who haven't even been intelligent enough to read the research. They haven't been willing to read Spies in Academic Clothing or Entheogens, What's in a Name, or Gordon Wasson, The Man, the Legend, the Myth. And they just think, oh, Jan Ervin, he's a crazy idiot wackadoo because he's attacked my CIA hero Terrence McKenna or Timothy Leary or Ken Kesey or my pedophile hero Allen Ginsberg or my pedophile hero, you know, William Burroughs. These guys were six CIA agents. You know, folks, they're not your heroes. They're selling you social engineering. They are the social engineers. They are the ones who are selling the degeneracy and getting you to choose your agency, to choose iniquitous behavior rather than longevity for yourself and your family. And if you're caught into that behavior, folks, stop it. Get yourself right and, you know, start building a family. So anyway, I'll leave it there. Anybody else have any last points?
We should probably wrap it up. Yeah. But we don't have a Logos Roundtable group yet on Facebook, but I do have this Thinkwell group where we kind of go just talk about fallacies, and I encourage people to post about stuff they run into that might help other people. You know, if you run into a fallacy, like appeal to ridicule, like every day or something, you know, and you're like, you know what, I'm just going to quick see if anyone else does, and we can go about how to like interact with that. Cause I see some people, they get really rude, and
it's probably one of the most common fallacies. It's the horse. And for those of you who don't know, the appeal to ridicule is the argument when somebody tells you you're wrong, Steve, because and that's their whole argument. They have no intelligent argument, no point. Or Steve, you're wrong because you wear pink shirts on Fridays or whatever. But it's, you know, it's a form of an ad hominem.
Well,
they
I'll
have no
them,
argument. It's just
I'll
dumb.
I'll tell them that I think some dude in the 1600s might have gotten history wrong, and they'll go, well, you probably think that aliens made the earth flat, don't you? I'm like, what?
It's like, you know what, you know, and see, people, if you're bringing up irrelevant arguments in your counterattacks, you need to stop that. You know, it's like fallacies fall under three categories: relevance, presumption, and ambiguity. So what relevance does your comment about flat earth, you know, or the aliens or this or that have to do, or, you know, a conspiracy theorist? Really? Did you check the facts? Did you check your own beliefs? Did you ask who, what, where, and when before you determine why, and then can explain how you derive to a conclusion? If all of your conclusions are because some TV pundit, you know, threw out the word conspiracy theorist, and that's, and whenever you hear that, ridicule, whenever you hear anything that challenges the official status quo, you know, if you blurt out conspiracy theorists, or if you think that that's a valid argument, or if you think that ha 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 is a valid argument, you are the idiot. I hate to tell you, but you're the idiot, and you need to start using your brain. You need to start thinking. You need to start fact checking before you think you know the truth. You know,
so yeah, we got a great Dunning and Kruger for all that over at Thinkwell. If you guys want to check it out on Facebook,
all right.
If you're looking, if you don't have any friends to talk about this stuff with, you know, we're around in the evening, so we can always talk to you on that group if you want to interact there.
Maybe I'll check it out. I'm terrible about Facebook groups, though. But anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess that's it. Caleb, anybody else have anything to add?
I was just real quickly going to say that one big thing with me, I'm completely open to being wrong about anything that I'm talking about. I don't have a problem looking at anybody's opinions about this or that. I'm more interested in, because we do the trivium, we're more interested in that which is. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. I'll do my best to fix anything that I've said in the show that has been wrong.
Correct.
I love primary citations, and if I don't mind being wrong, that's when I learn the most. So,
but have citations, have research. Don't just, you know, your mommy told you Santa Claus is real, so therefore Caleb or Jan is wrong, you know?
That's what I was getting at. I was basically getting at, yeah, if you're going to have arguments against some of the stuff we talk about, you're really going to make yourself look bad unless you understand the trivium really well. I'm telling you, because I don't think there's a better way to think. You know, critical thinking is very important. So spend a lot of time with your critical thinking. I'm working on it. I'm not perfect, but call me out if I'm not doing anything that I claim to be doing. I don't want to be a hypocrite or anything like that. So, yeah.
I'll add on that. One of the most common arguments that I'll get, you know, from people who don't use critical thinking, although they, of course, everybody thinks they have critical thinking, even if they've never studied it, never studied the trivium, never studied logic. But one of the most common arguments they'll have is, you know, I've seen your show and I disagree with a lot of what you say.
Yeah, the general.
Okay. Right, right. So, so what specific points do you disagree with? Because my show is all based, my show is based on primary research and documentation. So which of the facts did you research and which ones did you find an error? And well, you know, I just disagree because I did, you know, lots of LSD and hung out at Grateful Dead shows in the 60s. Yeah. And, you know, you're wrong. Yeah. And, you know, I love my rock idols and graven images, and you're just, you know, you're wrong and you're stupid because, so can you substantiate any of your points? Well, no, but you're just wrong, and you know, and my opinion is valid too because I'm a millennial, so you know that's the usually the extent of their logic. All right, folks, thanks so much for your support.
Thank you. Hey, may I say one thing? I just joined Thinkwell, and it's a really nice looking site. So I recommend it to all to drop by and check it out.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.